This is Audible.
Dreamscape presents Reign the Earth, the Elemente, by A.C. Goggin. Narrated by Sunila Nankani. Poison. There was a scorpion in my tent. I stared at him. The moon was bright, but only a little of its light filtered in. The scorpion walked carefully over the sand, his tail raised, but not ready to strike. He moved slowly toward where I was meant to be asleep on my bedroll. With a deep breath, I held up my hand. "By the power of the desert, I command you to stop," I said. In return, he curled his tail up, his body tilting down so the tail could flick out with poisonous aim. I laughed, leaning forward and scooping him up. He stayed tense and primed for a long moment, but scorpions and dragons had nothing to fear from each other. And he remembered that after a while, crawling tentatively on my skin. I moved to support him so he wouldn't fall. "Come to wish me good luck?" I asked him, stroking the stiff shell of his body. With a deep sigh, I confessed, "I think I need it." His tail flattened further, but flipped up again when I stopped. When the tent flap moved to the side and a shaft of moonlight pierced my tent, I gasped, sitting up and sheltering him in my hands. "Good," Kata said. "You're awake." Then she saw what was in my hands and jerked away. "There are less lethal ways out of a marriage, Shalia." Laughing, I let the scorpion go and lifted the back of the tent so he could scuttle away. I jumped out of bed as she came in. She lowered her hood at the same time that the tent flap closed, and it seemed like the pale silver of her hair sucked up all the luminescence of the moon. "Kata!" I cried, throwing my arms around her. "You came!" Her arms tightened around me, and the unsteady rock of our hug knocked us over. We fell onto the sand, giggling, nose to nose, like it used to be. "Of course I did. I came as soon as I heard. I'm sorry it took me so long." I smiled at her. "You're here now. And we have so much to talk about." Her answering smile was watery as she looked at me. "You're getting married," she said, her voice softer. "How do you feel?" "Short," was the first answer that came to mind, and her nose wrinkled. I wasn't short, and I knew she was about to point that out to me, but I sighed. "I think queens are supposed to be taller." Our noses touched. "I've seen him," she told me. "He's not much taller than you, if at all." A breath filled my lungs, full of questions, full of what does he look like, what does he stand for, why does he want me, what do you know? But it didn't matter. In just a few hours, I would be his bride. And I would find out soon enough the answers to all those questions. But tomorrow I wouldn't have Kata. "Are we doing it?" I asked her. She grinned. "Tonight? You're supposed to be up before the dawn. We both know I'm not sleeping much tonight. Besides, it's bad luck to break with tradition." In answer, she tugged my hands, pulling us both up from the sand. We stuck our heads out, looking around for my brothers or uncles or anyone else who would stop us. "Is Rian with you?" I whispered to her. "Yes," she whispered back, tugging me forward. With no one in sight, we ran out of the tent, hand in hand, feet sliding in the sand. The sky was clear, The moon, bright enough to guide us, but so much colder than her brother, the sun. We ran faster as the sand became more compact. Our clan was camped right outside the city, ready for the morning, when I would greet the sun, my husband, and a whole new life, all in one day. Coming upon Jitra was as strange and magical as every time before. Rolling dunes disappeared, leaving a blankness on the horizon, and the shifting sands slid away as solid earth appeared beneath. A hard shelf of rock then parted to reveal a narrow cleft wide enough for a single person, the mouth of a staircase leading down through the cliff into the city. Jitra was a city cut into the rock. Long ago, a powerful river had eroded a sloping path that was as wide across as 10 men. From there, the desert clans had carved into the walls, forming massive dwellings, shaded and cool, eternal and unyielding. The river still ran in a narrow vein, cutting through the mountain rock until it cascaded off a cliff at the end of the city, giving my nomadic people their one fixed source of water. It was a holy place. Kata always had a hard time finding it. She wasn't a clanswoman, a fact I tended to forget, until times like this, when she couldn't find her way to this sacred city. Her fingers, pale and strange on my dark skin, clutched mine tighter as I led her to the break in the earth, and we plunged into darkness as we descended the steep, narrow stone stairs into the city. We slowed at the bottom of the staircase. I could hear city guards somewhere ahead and tugged her to the side. Another path burrowed deeper into the mountain rather than out into the city, and I led the way, sure of my steps as I would always be in Jitra. Another staircase, older, less even, twisted around the rock and deep into the ground. Along that staircase, the air changed from the hot dryness of the desert to a damp that clung to the walls and our fingers. It was there that Kata became more confident in her steps. Keeping pace with me, able to tell where she was going instead of being dragged. After a few more wild steps and a laugh that echoed, the passageway opened into a huge cavern, and the massive underground lake that was the hidden treasure of the mountains. The moment I saw it, I halted, and Kata slammed into my back. I barely noticed her as I looked around us. Hundreds of thousands of tiny droplets of water hung suspended in the air around us. The fine scatter of mist caught the glimmer of a far-off shaft of moonlight at the surface and refracted it, sharing it among the tiny beads of water, until the whole cavern looked like it had swallowed all the stars of the night sky. I laughed, delighted, and Kata moved forward, letting the drops break over her like tiny kisses. I touched them with my fingertips, watching the little bubbles break into smaller and smaller pieces, still suspended, still standing at attention for Kata. The cave knew her. In this place of water, her power was strong, beautiful, magical. As I gazed over such wonder, I felt spirits pressing close around me, protecting me, filling me with faith. Tomorrow would be perfect, and this marriage that would take me away from my family would be the beginning of a long and eternal peace. My sacrifice would protect my people. Kata turned in a slow circle, a happy smile on her face, and the water coated her skin. In the desert, she was always dry. Her pale skin cracked and sore, aching for the water. But here she was whole. Here she was everything she was born to be. Her power and the way the world responded to it was the most stunning thing I'd ever seen. And then, at some unseen command from her, the water droplets fell, those around me slipping over my skin like a tiny burst of rain. The light dimmed without them, and I went for the torch on the wall, scraping my hand as I grabbed it. I struck the flint. When it flared to life, I saw Kata skimming out of her desert clothes, tossing them to the side as she dove into the water. I put the torch back in its holder and followed her. Jumping into the water with a massive splash, the sound mixing with our laughter and skittering around the whole cavern. "Oh," I said, standing in the shallow water as I saw red blooming in the water. "What did you do?" Kata said, looking at the blood coming from a short gash on my hand. "I thought I'd just scratched myself," I told her. "Here," she said. But before the word was even out, her hand touched my hand, and I watched the small wound close up and fade, the scar turning pink to white in the space of a breath. "How do you do that?" I whispered. "It's the water," she told me. "I can feel the water in your skin, in your blood. I can make it answer my command." I had known Kata so very long, and yet I understood so little about her abilities still. "Thank you," I said as her hand fell away. She waved at me. "I love this place," Kata said, shifting to float on her back. I kicked my way over to her, floating on my back beside her, looking up at the long mineral spines that hung above us like wet, shining teeth. "I know you do," I told her. "Now tell me about your trip. Did you find the Earth Temple?" "It's called an Adi," she said. "And yes." I looked at her, my heart suddenly aching. "So they're all open now and you can rest?" I looked away. "But I won't be here anymore." "Rest." She stared at the ceiling. "All the powers have come back to the world, yes. But I can't rest, Shalia. Can't you tell? There's nothing different? Nothing happened to you when I opened the earth element?" I put my legs down so I could look over at her. "Not this again." She did the same. "You have the potential for an elemental power. I know that you do. And nothing changed when I opened the other elements, so it has to be Earth. Just because I think of you as my sister doesn't mean we actually are." She drew a breath like my mother did when we were being difficult. "Shalia, it's not about families. Maybe it was years ago when my people were murdered. The elements, they found places of extreme power and hid. Until I let the elements out again, no one could use them." "I know all this," I told her. "I know that's why you left, to go find these temples and crack the elements open like an egg. But it doesn't mean I'm an islander." "No," she said hotly. "It means everything changed when my people died. It means that anyone can have these powers now. I have no control over who receives them. They're everywhere in the world, not just in the islands. And I can feel it in you, as certain as whether or not you're breathing, that you have a power. The elements have been awakened. This was the last Adi, so you should be able to use your power by now." She frowned, looking into the water. "If I did it right..." "No, I'm sure I did it right." When she first told me I had the potential for an elemental power, I had been thrilled. She could control water, and over time she had even developed the ability to heal things. I was in awe of her, and it would have been exciting to share that with her. But I couldn't. Not ever. I'd accepted that. Probably around the time she kept leaving me, kept choosing these temples over our friendship. "I don't have a power," I said again. "And it doesn't even matter." "It does," she told me. "Now, more than ever. Your future husband has declared the Elemente to be traitors, and their powers illegal. More than that, he's persecuted them. All the better that I don't have it, then, I told her. Can't you just stop? Can't we just swim and enjoy being home? Kata looked so hurt that I immediately regretted my words. I'm sorry, I said immediately. I shook my head, scattering droplets in the water. I knew this wouldn't be easy for you. Easy, she said softly. Aside from the fact that his father murdered my people, and he doesn't seem to have very different beliefs, I might not ever see you again. No, I said solemnly. Don't say that. We'll see each other again. I've been helping Rian, she admitted softly. With the resistance. Do you know about your brother's cause? Only what I can manage to overhear from Father yelling. But I do know that whatever Rian is doing in the Trifectet, the king thinks this marriage will stop Rian from doing violence to him, and the king will stop doing violence to the desert people. By putting you between them, she said. Don't you see that? Yes, I told her. Of course I do. But better between them than standing to the side as they burn another one of my brothers in the sand. Because next time it could be Rian or Kairos in Thorin's place. She looked at me like I was foolish and young, and I huffed out a sigh that rippled the water. Kata, I would have been married soon anyway. I could have married some Discorpios boy, or I could marry this king. I could protect my family for once. I could have my marriage mean something. You're just as fierce as your brothers, she told me. I'm not faulting you for that. I just don't think you know how dangerous this will be. Peace is always dangerous, I said. Maybe, she said. But have you even wondered why he wants a desert bride? He was supposed to marry a rich princess across the sea. Why is it more essential to form peace with the desert than with them? My mouth drew tight, and I returned to floating on my back. Shalia? Kata said suspiciously. You know something. You won't like it, I said. Shalia, she insisted. I think he's looking for this, I told her. The lake. I couldn't hear her moving in the water anymore. What makes you think that? As part of the marriage agreement, they're sending some men to pore over Jitra and the mountains, I said. They said they believe the desert is sheltering Trifectet dissenters and want to search it. But I think they're looking for something else, and this is the only thing I can imagine they're looking for. You can't let them do that, she said, gripping my arm. I raised my head. Don't worry, I insisted. No clansman would ever willingly let his place be discovered. The only things that could threaten us are lack of water and the spirits turning on us, I said. They'll hide this reserve as best they can. Even you can't find your way down here, and the water pulls you. I looked at her. If something happened to the lake, would that hurt your power? No, she said, shaking her hair. This water is pure and powerful, but the water Adi is in the islands. Good, I said. If I had told you it would take my power away, would that change anything? She asked. What can I do to make you refuse this marriage? I gave her an angry look. But I wasn't sure what to say. I couldn't stand the idea of her being hurt. But what could I really do to stop this from happening? I believe this marriage is a dangerous mistake, Kata said. And worse, it will cut you off from those who could give you aid. It gives him everything and leaves you powerless. No, I said. It will make me queen. And it will keep my family safe. And it costs us nothing. Our friendship is not nothing. I met her eyes for a long moment. Which is why no one can take it away from us, no matter where we are. She nodded, still unsure, and I moved closer, drifting by her side, hoping I would always have her by mine. Welcome to Jitra. We left the water, and Kata used her magic to pull the moisture out of our hair and clothes, a glittering mist that lifted off me and swirled back into the lake. We snuck out of the city and back to the sleeping camp, smothering our giggles as we rushed to our beds in separate tents. I pretended to be asleep when the women came to wake me up and start preparations for my marriage. They rinsed my feet, my hands, my neck, rubbing oil and ilai blossoms into my skin until the tent smelled like crisp fruit and sunlight, even in the darkness. One cousin insisted I should open my robe a little to show the valley between my breasts, but my mother clucked her away. A wedding is not about lust, my mother said, smoothing my robes into place. It is about trust and partnership, alliance, faith and faithfulness. It's a little about lust, my cousin Cora muttered. Mother gave her a warning look and went to fetch more flowers. I grabbed Cora's hands as soon as Mother turned away. Cora was married, and more than that, she lived in Jitra and knew more ways of the world. What if he doesn't want me? I whispered to her. What if he doesn't lust for me? She laughed, and she held my palms open and stroked her fingers over them. You? She said. You are the most lovely clanswoman alive. Why do you think he chose you? Because of Rian. Because of Father. Everyone speaks of your beauty. The wild desert rose, she told me. She laughed and lowered her voice. And often they say very foul things about what they would like to do to a beauty like you. So trust me, you incite lust. My cheeks flamed. Oh. Oh, indeed, she told me and kissed my hands. Make him happy, little flower. But take a little happiness for yourself as well. Happiness? Said another cousin. You'll be a queen. You'll have jewels and gold. You'll live in the city of three and everyone will love you. How could you not be happy? I tried to smile, but another cousin grabbed my hands. And the clothes, she said. They're scandalous, but you look so beautiful. People will riot in the streets. And no one ever goes hungry there, said another girl. My mother came back in, and her quick eyes brushed over my cousins. Cora, she said, take the others and go fetch some food. It won't do to have Shalia faint right off the ledge, will it? No, aunt, Cora said, bending her head. We'll be right back. The girls tittered and laughed as they filed out of the room, beaming back at me. My mother drew a breath and came forward to me, taking my hands. You're shaking, she said, meeting my eyes. I'm nervous, I whispered. She smiled, smoothing my hair back. You haven't been yet. You seemed so calm when we first spoke about your marriage. I nodded. I know. What are you afraid of, my little flower? I looked down at the ground. Tell me, Shalia, she said, pulling me down onto a bench. It just seemed so simple before. I would marry someone anyway. Why shouldn't it be this foreign king? Especially if it stops our people from being murdered. My mother's hands tightened on me, and I cursed my words. I had lost a brother when Torin died, but she had lost a son. I don't want to leave everyone, I admitted in a hushed voice. I don't want to leave you. My hands gripped hers painfully tight. I feel like such a coward, I told her. She wrapped her arms around me. My cowardice hidden in my mother's arms. I know what we've asked you to do, my love. You are giving up your family and the desert, but you're making a brave choice for us. You are doing what your brothers, with all their swords and valor, can never accomplish. You are bringing us peace and life and safety. I held her tight, not wanting to tell her that I would give it all up if it meant I could stay a child one day longer. If it meant Kata and I could swim on in the lake forever. And I would always be surrounded by my clan. I don't know how to be a queen, I protested. She petted my hair. Don't be silly, my love. You know exactly how to be queen. I shook my head. Just look at us, Shalia. This new country. They will be your family now. You will teach them as you've taught Katrin and Gavin. You will support them as you do Aiden and Kale. Sometimes you must even chide them as you do Kairos. She sighed with a smile. And hopefully they will listen to you, unlike him. You are your father's daughter, my love, and you can't help but lead. I sniffed, pulling back to look at her. I'd rather be like you, I told her softly. You would never hesitate to do something that would save the clan, no matter the cost to you. Her mouth trembled a little, and she gave a soft laugh. I hesitate all the time, my love. You will stumble, just as I have. But you will persevere. You are a daughter of the desert, and your feet and heart will never fail you. She took me into her arms again, until my tears were finished. My cheeks were barely dry before my father came into the room. He kissed my mother gently and came to me, taking my hands. For the first time in my life, I didn't want to meet his eyes, scared he would see my indecision, my confusion, my fear.
You look beautiful, daughter, he said to me. I never thought I would see the day when you became a wife. How can you have 17 years already?
I sniffed, and my father tugged my chin up so he could see my eyes, desperately holding back tears. His face changed, filling with worry that looked strange on his warrior's impassive scowl.
You're frightened?
He asked. Taking a deep breath, I nodded slowly. He tucked me against him.
You don't have to marry. You can stay with me all your days, he told me, soft into my ear. I won't mind.
A little laugh jumped out of me at the idea, so close to my own thoughts a moment ago. But I thought of my mother's words, my brother's lives, my clan's safety, and resolve twisted around my spine, making me strong. No, I want to marry him. He pulled back a little.
You're certain, my girl?
My skin glowed, the brown shining until it looked like dark gold. My breath shook as I smoothed down the light blue robes, running shaking fingers over embroidered threads of every color for luck, for wealth, for love, for babies. Everything was in place. Everything was just as I had imagined it. But I felt like the shed skin of a snake, still holding shape but hollow inside. And yet, I could give no other answer. I nodded. He touched my chin to urge me to stand straighter, and I did. His hands rested on my shoulders as he looked me over. Father's eyes came back to my face, and his lips curled into a small smile as he gave me a single solemn nod. Mother placed a gauzy cloth in my father's hands. He bowed over the gift, and she bowed back to him, then came forward and kissed him as he stood straight. He smiled at her, and I wondered if my husband would look at me like that, if he could ever love me without knowing me first, choosing me and not my father's position, my brother's head, my people's pride. My father held back the tent flap, and my mother nudged me forward. Outside my tent, the whole clan was assembled, waiting for me. I shut my eyes for a moment before I greeted them. I could do this. This was for them. This was for my people, my family, my clan, and that would give me strength. The sun hadn't risen yet, but it was close. The sky flush with wanting for the light. Caught in the half-world between night and day, my family came forward to bless me. The women murmured behind us, speaking words to the great skies, calling down blessings to me, as the men of the clan filed in behind the women. The women parted, and my breath caught. In the light of day, Rian's dark skin was paler than I'd ever seen it from the years of living outside the desert's unrelenting sun, and his hair was cut in a strange, short style. My oldest brother gave me a lopsided grin.
"Kata ruined my surprise, didn't she?"
Rian said, coming to wrap his arms around me. I pressed my head into his shoulder, hugging him tight. I knew, but that didn't ruin it, I told him. I'm so happy to see you. He pulled back.
I wouldn't miss this day, Shai.
Even if I'm marrying him? I lifted my eyes to his. The grin fell a little and he kissed my temple.
You don't have to do this,
he told me softly. I met his eyes and squared my shoulders. I'm sorry. I know it's not what you want, I told him, but I want to do this. He sighed, hugging me again.
Don't be sorry,
he said.
Be happy.
I sniffed, letting go of him. He kissed my cheek once more and stepped back. Rian held up a red thread knotted with gold coins. It was heavy as he placed it around my neck. And I looked at the coins, staring at the foreign seal printed on the face. They were trifected coins. And tomorrow, when I left the desert to go live in my husband's country, they would be my currency. My brother's strange and hidden life in another country would now be my future. He kissed my cheek.
For wealth, little sister. That you never want for anything.
Will you stand with me? I asked.
I don't think that will endear you to your husband, Shai. As little as I like giving up my right as the eldest, I think my presence would only remind him of the resistance, not peace.
At least you're here, I murmured, squeezing him. Kale gave a solemn look to Rian as he stepped up to me.
Even though Rian can't be there, you won't stand alone,
he told me. He showed me a white and black thread woven together.
You are desert-born. And you will never be alone.
Aiden was next, giving me a blue thread knotted around the mountain cat tooth.
for ferocity, he said, pinching my nose. Show them what the heart of the desert truly is.
Kairos took my hand. Osmost, his hawk that was always on his shoulder, sprang up at this, shrieking into the sky. Kairos held my hand and tied the light blue thread around my wrist.
Keep your secrets,
he said with a flash of his bright smile.
A woman needs secrets.
My two little siblings were next, Katrin and Gavin standing together. They presented one thread tied around a small purse.
I made the thread, and he made the purse, Kat explained.
She put it around my neck.
It's full of seeds, Gavin said, in case they don't feed you.
So you never go hungry,
Katrin corrected. Gavin shrugged.
Same thing.
They stepped aside, and the rest of the clan came forward, stringing threads over my neck. The women began to sing, a low, keening cry. As each thread was placed over my neck, I was struck by the weight of the threads that weren't there. The cousins who had died fighting back the trifectate. The women and children who had starved when we couldn't find food without our best hunters. Our numbers had dwindled, and yet the spirits of those we'd lost pressed close upon me, clinging to my skin like the smell of burning bodies on the sand. I carried death into my marriage. Kata was last, never part of the clan, but she came to me and squeezed my hands and kissed both of my cheeks.
I have to stay hidden, she reminded me. But my heart is with you.
I nodded and hugged her tight. She let me go and gave me one last sad look before going to stand by Rian. By the time the clan was done, it was nearly time. My neck was heavy and everyone stepped back from me. The sun was coming up over the dune, and I faced the entrance to the city as it did. Standing before my clan, I was the first thing the light touched, and as it hit my face, the singing rose. The sunlight and the sound filled up the hollow space inside me, and I shut my eyes, trying to trap it there, trying to hold the power and peace of the desert within me always. My father came forward with the cloth, laying it on my shoulders and wrapping it lightly around my head.
The next man who sees your face will be yours forever,
he told me. And then we began to walk. The women behind me broke down the tents and packed them in our quick, efficient way. But from then on, I was not allowed to look back. I was not allowed to stop. Instead, I moved forward, feeling the sand filter through my sandals, rushing over my feet, urging me onward. Peace wasn't a thing that came swift and easy. Peace took courage and faith, and I had those. I would make my family proud, and through my wedding I would protect them for once, for always. Charlatan. When we came to the break, my father went first, leading us into the city as Osmost took to the air. The long staircase was dark after the unending, unshadowed light in the desert, and it took a disorienting moment to adjust. In the darkness, I thought of the night before, sneaking down to the lake that called to Kata. I wondered if I would miss the sand as she did the water. The sunlight broke on us at the end of the stairs, and we walked out into the wide avenue of Jitra's stone-carved dwellings.
Dragon!
I turned to see my uncle embrace my father,
then turned to my mother and haul her off the ground.
She was small, like my sister, Katrin, and I wondered how it would be to feel so delicate within a family. To be a woman who bore 8 children, a woman of iron and bone, and still look fragile.
DeFalco's clan welcomes you to Jitra,
my uncle said.
The Dragon Clan is most welcomed,
my father said, bowing to him at such formality.
And our little bride,
my uncle cried, turning to me.
He was not like my father. He was tall, most desert men were. But he was soft where my father was battle scars and rock. And it was silly to call me little. I was only half a hand shorter than he was.
Uncle, I said, sweeping my wedding robes back and giving him a bow before he laughed and hugged me.
It is a miracle, he said. The trifecta and the clans in one city without any of it on fire.
My heart went tight and my mouth ran dry. Saying things may wish them so, my mother said, patting her brother on the arm. Don't. He huffed out in protest, but she silenced him.
Is the procession ready?
She asked. He smiled at her and nodded. As we moved through Jitra, everyone came out of their houses, offering threads and blessings to me, and then followed us. It was a long labor, and Jitra sloped down sharply, so much that I felt like my body tilted back as we walked down, my feet moving forward, but my head leaning away, torn between my future and past. My clan was around me in a cloud, but they all suddenly stopped and whispered and giggled. They parted enough to let me see why. There was a man there, standing across the river. He stood beside a girl younger than I was. They both had pale skin and dark, shining hair. She wore some kind of fashion that was like a robe, but bound tight to her body with ribbons. But he was magnificent. I knew it was the traditional garb of the foreign men, but his clothes were cut so close to his body, they seemed indecent, and hidden behind my covering, I let my eyes wander. He had powerful legs and a narrow waist, shoulders that seemed wider than my hands outstretched. The kind of shoulders that could surround a girl and make a fortress with their strength. And eyes. Such eyes. They were green, bright as fire, lashed thick and black, and so powerful their heat leaped across the distance. He was looking at me. He nodded, slow and respectful. Though he couldn't see my eyes, I swore his met mine. My cousins and family closed around me then, pushing me along. Please, I prayed to the skies, let that be my husband. We kept walking, and I caught glimpses of the foreign man as he processed down as well, meeting with others dressed in similar uniforms. Maybe it wasn't my husband. Perhaps that woman was his wife, and I still had yet to know my fate. We reached the edge of the city, and the clan stopped. Kale came forward, leading me to the very edge of the cliff. Beside us, the river that was the life-giving vein running down the center of Jitra came to an end, dropping over the cliff and pooling 30 feet below. As I held my breath, Kale helped me down the old, slick ladder of rock to stand on the ledge beside the pool. I looked up, and my family was only shadows against the bright glare of light. Kale touched my arm. I let out a breath and allowed him to lead me forward to the Teorain, the small bridge of rock that the river had cut under. I could feel the thunder of the water and the falls vibrating beneath my feet. The Teorain was only feet wide, and not much longer across, the very limit of Jitra and my world, and at the sight of it, my heart pounded. Keeping my eyes away from the 1,000-foot drop on the other side of the bridge, I looked over, and my heart matched the thunder of the falls. As if I had wished him into being, the handsome man I had seen earlier was standing there, his hands behind his back, looking regal and stately. It must be him. It must be my husband. I looked at him in his perfect grandeur, as if expecting some signal. But he couldn't see me looking through the cloth, I remembered. I knew he had a younger brother. This must be the man beside him, slightly taller and more severe, his nose twisted, his face hard and brutal like it was carved from the rock around us. Of course, I couldn't be certain. One of them was my husband, and one of them was his witness, and I suspected I wouldn't know for sure until my husband was the one to remove the veil. Kale stood behind me on the small landing and nudged me toward the Teorain. I could see the pool to my left and the infinite, terrible drop on the right. A gust of wind pushed me a little, and I sucked in a breath, trying to plant my feet. It was unnatural, a desert girl so high above the earth. I was a dragon, a scorpion, not a bird. I stepped forward and froze. I was shaking so hard, I didn't trust myself to take another step. My whole body was trembling, and I couldn't look up. Staring at my feet and the rushing water beneath the bridge so long, the rest of me felt off balance too. I am going to fall. Uselessly, wildly, I put my arms out trying to balance, and it didn't help. My heart was pounding in my throat, and I couldn't even cry out or look for my brother. I was alone, and I was going to die. Arms caught me, but it wasn't Kale. My savior was in front of me, and my hands landed on stiff black cloth. I looked up to see the broken nose of the second trifected man on the bridge. My heart sank as I realized my girlish hopes of the handsome man becoming my husband were wrong. Certainly it didn't matter. Despite his nose, he wasn't ugly by any means. Besides, I wasn't marrying him for his face, and he had just saved me from falling 1,000 feet after all. He took my shaking hands, his skin warm and rough against mine, and the shaking calmed.
"Come,"
he said, loosing one of my hands. I drew a deep breath, and my heart beat heavy and hard as he took the end of the cloth and unwound it from my face. Our eyes met in truth for the first time. I drew a slow breath in, and something within me shifted, moved, sliding around my chest and pulling tight, shivering down my spine. But then it was like the shiver was contagious, and the earth jolted, shaking and moving, threatening to throw us off the Teorain as I gasped, clinging to the black cloth on my husband's arms. It wasn't my imagination, either. Someone shouted, and my husband caught me, holding my arms and waist, so close to holding me tight in his arms that I couldn't breathe. A moment later, the world seemed to calm, and the guests all looked at one another, murmuring about what had caused the tremor. My husband took my hand again.
"What was that?"
he asked. I shook my head, mute. I had no idea. He looked past me to Kale.
"Is the bridge still stable?"
he asked, shouting over the water's roar.
"Mountains break and move,"
Kale said.
"Jitra is eternal."
My husband's eyebrows lifted, looking at me. I opened my mouth to start speaking the words, but he spoke before I did.
"Come,"
he repeated.
"Meet your husband."
He pulled me along the bridge as my heart stopped. Meet him? Hadn't I just... But no, it couldn't be. The one with the broken nose brought me to the apex of the Teorain and easily stepped around his brother. Behind him, as Kale did for me. His brother's witness, and not my husband. I couldn't help but shake. They had done it all wrong,
It was my husband who was supposed to remove the covering, who was supposed to have that magic moment of unveiling. No one else. Not a brother. Not a charlatan. How could they have not known this error? My mother had schooled me for weeks on every moment of what would happen at this ceremony. Had no one told the same things to him? My true husband really was the handsome one I had first seen, first wished for. His green eyes bright and captivating, staring at me like he was waiting for something. He squeezed my hand, and I realized I was supposed to speak. "We've come to the ends of the earth, so that we may journey back together," I said, so soft it was little more than a whisper. "Here I leave the maiden, the daughter, the child. Here I become a wife, one part with my husband." I saw his lips move, saying a version of the same, but I couldn't hear him over the river water and the violent rush of blood in my ears. Wrong. It was all wrong. I turned to Kale, and he handed me the bunch of flowers in his hand. I tore off the heads, filling my hands with multi-layered blooms, and turned back to my husband. Husband. My husband held out his hand, and I put some of the blooms into it. He looked at me, and we spoke the final words together. Words my cousins made me practice late into the night until I knew them by heart. "Today we release our former selves like flowers unto the wind. Today we become one." I opened my hand and he did the same, letting the flower petals drop a little before they caught the wind and swirled up, a few coming back toward us and the rest flying out into the air. Then his hands were on my waist, and he pulled me closer. I turned back to him and sucked in a gasp. He paused for a moment, and his warm breath ran over my lips before he pressed forward, kissing me. His lips were dry, and I stood still, wondering if I was meant to do something else. He let me go all at once, and despite Kale's words earlier, I did feel alone. No one in my family told the Tri-King that his brother had made a grave blunder, but it was all I could think of. We were taken to the Great Hall of Jitra, and the raucous celebration that usually followed a wedding was delayed as my father and husband sat at the long table, and the families were introduced. My father shook hands with my husband's brother, and he bowed his head respectfully, saying his name. Galen. Galen straightened and swept his arm behind his sister, saying her name, Danae. They stood stiffly as all my siblings, save Rian, were introduced to them, and my husband watched, his chin raised, staring at them coolly. Then the families parted like water, the desert to one side, the trifectets to the other. "My siblings and I are the three-faced god incarnate, the holy rulers of the Bone Lands and the vastness of the Trifectet, and we have taken your daughter as one of our own," my husband said. He looked at me, standing with my siblings behind the table, and his eyes held mine for a moment in a way that made me smile and stand straighter. I had done it. I had said the words. And this was my reward. Peace.
"And I will care for her as family should, and in so doing, I pledge to lay down my arms and leave the desert unmolested." "We promise to do the same,"
my father said.
"We will keep our borders and leave the Bone Lands free from any retaliation from our people, and we will welcome the Bone Lands into the desert. We will be at peace."
"Peace,"
my husband echoed, and he raised his cup to me as documents were brought forth. They drank from a shared cup and signed the papers, and then my husband quit the table, coming to me. Great feast tables were brought out, the remnants of the treaty signing removed, and music played. His hand slipped over my waist, and everything else was forgotten, my heart stuttering with nerves.
"Come with me,"
he asked. I smiled brightly at him and nodded. The sky was dark and had taken all the heat of the day with it, and as soon as we stepped outside, I shivered.
"You're cold,"
he realized.
"Take my jacket."
He started unbuttoning what I thought was a shirt. It never occurred to me in all the time I'd seen trifected men that they might have more clothes under the black. He put it around my shoulders, and it was warm from his body.
"You must have been so warm today," I said, pulling it around me.
He shrugged.
"I'm certainly not used to desert heat."
He tucked the jacket straighter on me, then let his hand settle on my waist. It was the closest I'd ever been to a boy, not my brother. I knew I was staring at him. He was beautiful. He had a wide jaw, a sharp short nose, and black hair that fell rakishly over his forehead. His handsome face almost made up for his brother removing the veil. Almost. I reached up and smoothed his hair back, and he smiled. His thumb stroked my waist, but it felt oddly ticklish.
"Are you pleased by this match?"
he asked.
"By our marriage?"
"Of course," I said quickly.
"Are you pleased by me?"
I met his eyes. They were direct, forceful, like staring into the sun. "I think so," I said. He nodded.
"Your happiness is important to me."
"It is?" His hand touched my cheek, stroking it gently and nudging my chin down. His thumb touched my lower lip, and then his mouth followed it. I waited patiently to feel the things my cousin spoke of. Heat and electricity, such as a summer storm had never seen. But they never came. But they would. He was handsome, and we were married now. It was simply a matter of getting used to each other. He pulled back.
"I am yours,"
he said.
"Entirely."
I smiled at him, because I knew this was supposed to please me. But I wasn't even sure what that meant. I was devoted and committed to this marriage and him, and the cause they both represented. But was that the same thing as being his? I didn't know.
"Do you know what's strange?"
he asked, touching my cheek again.
"I don't even know your name."
"Shalia," I said, stunned. He had never asked, never once in all of this. But then I hadn't asked for his name either. This marriage had never been about us.
"And I'm Calyx,"
he told me. He smiled.
"I'm sorry to have kissed you without knowing your name, Shalia."
It sounded silly. This whole thing was silly. I smiled at him, putting my hand on my chest carefully, wondering what it would take to lay claim to the heart beneath my palm. "The past doesn't matter," I assured him. "Our future together does." He nodded, kissing me again, and I pressed my mouth against his, wondering if I was supposed to push harder to feel something. Or maybe this was just what kissing felt like, and my cousins simply exaggerated? He broke off, smiling.
"We will have a grand future together, wife." "Come,"
Cairo said, striding to me with a wild grin on his face, his shoulder missing his hawk.
"Shai, bring your husband for a dance," he ordered. "And your highness, please convince your sister to dance with me."
I looked around him to see Danae slipping away into the crowd. Calix? I asked hesitantly.
I'd be honored, he said.